Good morning, and thank you all for joining us very early at the very start of our Strategic Decisions Conference. I'm Steve Winoker, U.S. Multi-Industry and Electrical Equipment Analyst here, and we are very fortunate again for, I think, the third year now we were just describing to be joined by Inge Thulin, now Chairman, President, and CEO of 3M, a company with $30 billion of sales, gross margin in excess of 47%. Operating margins of almost 22% and return on capital north of 16, with a dividend payout ratio of about 37% or so, and 2017 targets that call for 4-6% organic growth, 9-11% EPS growth, more than 20% ROIC, and 100% free cash flow conversion. Inge has been at 3M for more than 30 years, but took over the helm in February of 2012. Had operational responsibility before that as well. And I'm sure you'd all like to know that the stock is up about 28% since that time, almost 450 basis points of outperformance. So with that, I'd like to remind all of you that we have those anonymous index cards to fill out questions, raise them. They'll be brought up by runners to me for Inge. And with that, I'll hand it over to Inge, and then we'll go to Q&A. Thanks, Inge.
Thank you, and Steve, and good morning, everyone. Thank you for coming in very early, as Steve said, and even for Swede, this is a little bit early, to be honest. But it's a pleasure to be here, and it's 1 year since I was here last time at this conference, and what I thought I would do today is to touch on the primary themes in the plan that we developed during the last year. A year that I will describe as planning, progress, and performance. I will also, in the end, have a couple of slides on what we see now in the current year as our business. So, first of all, the question is, how do we create value for our company, and what is our fundamental strength? And the fundamental strength for 3M is the technology platforms that is in the center of the plan, and then that in connection with very strong manufacturing and engineering processes and capabilities and a geographical reach all over the world is the real strengths and fundamental platforms for the company. That in connection with world-class talent, which very much our local organization, as of our $30 billion U.S. dollar sales, 65% is in the international market. It's very important for us to have a local organization that can execute the plan. And the outcome of this is, of course, a very strong financial position and performance over many years that I will comment on in a second. What we started out a year ago was to lay out a new vision for 3M. And it was important for us in order to make sure we all knew internally, but more importantly, that our customer understood what we stood for, the purpose, and where we are going. And it embedded things that we are doing as a company every day and have done for over 100 years, meaning advancing, enhancing, and improving things for either companies, people, or in homes. And as you know, we are doing that through technologies, products, and innovation. And I think when you look upon that vision in terms of what the vision should be all about, which is what you do, how you do it, and where you do it, and think about 3M, we think this vision is very powerful and something that we inspire to obtain over time. What we also did, we laid out six new strategies for the company. And as you can see on this slide, they are all interdependent, and the four first ones are all around growth. They are important for us because we believe that there is much more growth opportunities for us on a global basis we move ahead. The first strategy is around where to play. The second one is how to win. And then you see the third one is the only strategy that starts with a statement. Invest in innovation. Invest in research and development. And I will make a comment on that later. So the four first one is around growth. The fifth one is around people. And the last one is around operational excellence. Of course, for us, operational excellence is a key element, and that element that will pay for the growth as we move ahead. What we did also during the year, we started to prioritize our businesses, and it was important for us as an organization to get a good understanding of the different divisions, where they stood, and what we needed to do in terms of allocation as we move ahead. As you can see on that slide here, that we categorized them in something called Heartland, something called Push Forward, and then some in Strategic Review. It's important not only for allocation of resources in terms of capital, but it's also important relative to selection of leadership for different businesses. At least for me, portfolio prioritization is essential for success of any company, and that was one of the reasons why we did it. We also realigned the organization. As you probably recall, we had six bigger businesses in the past, and we looked upon it in terms of making sure that we, after we had a vision and strategy in place, also looked to the organization. So a type of an orderly way to go, strategy first, organization second. And as you can see here, we formed them into five business groups with industrial, which is almost $10 billion. And then you have healthcare, consumer, safety, and graphics, and electronics, and energy. Very important for us in terms of coming closer to the customers, in terms of faster speed, in terms of the technology platforms back to the end markets. So that was an important realignment of the organization based on the market and the opportunities we saw. We also recommitted to research and development, and as I said, is the one strategy starting with a statement, invest in innovation. We have a very strong history of research and development and innovation, and historically we have spent in between 5 to 5.5% of our revenue into research and development. I don't believe that's enough, and I think we can do much more, and we have made a statement to come closer to 6% in the next 5-year period in the strategic plan. And it's important for us in terms of making sure that we can continue to launch and commercialize new-to-the-world products in order to, by definition, give a very good return to our shareholders as we move forward. When we look upon the opportunities in terms of growth, you see on this chart that we go back to 2003, 21% of our business was in the developing economies and 79 in the developed. And you can see the evolution after 2012, where that split is 34-66. And we believe in the next 5 years that's going to 40-45 in developing and 55-60 in the developed world. And why this is encouraging for us and very important is when we look upon the evolution of a country, the way an evolution is happening is, as all of us know, but it's important to think about it in terms of our portfolio 3M, it's always starting by building out infrastructure in a country. When that is done, the next thing that is happening is the manufacturing is moving in. As manufacturing is there, as people start to get money to spend, also safety is becoming important. And safety is often moved in through companies that have started to put in manufacturing in place, because in many cases those are companies that are coming from the developed world, and they will make sure that they protect the workers in that part of the world in the same way and with the same standard as in the developed world. After that is consumer coming. You know, people start to spend money, so they go to retail and start to spend money. And the last portion that is coming is healthcare. There's always healthcare in a country, of course, but the most advanced healthcare is coming in the end of the evolution. It's not going exactly in this way in all countries all the time, but basically this is what is happening. If you think about 3M's portfolio, we are in very early when infrastructure is created. We're into traffic safety systems, we're into telecom, etc. When manufacturing is moving in, we are there with our big business group in industrial, which is over 30% of the company. Big utilization for us and big opportunity. When safety is moving up, our whole portfolio around safety is playing a very important role, and as I said earlier, in many cases already specified in the developed world. When consumers start to move and spend money, we are there with our product line in terms of Post-it, Scotch, Filtrete, Command, etc. And then finally, our most profitable business unit is healthcare that is coming in the end. So when we look upon it in terms of the evolution for us in portfolio, as a country have the evolution going forward, our portfolio fits very well. And we have proven this by ourselves, specifically in the most developed of developing economies for us, which is Latin America. Latin America for us today is over $2 billion US dollar in sales, very profitable and a very balanced portfolio. So this is working for us through our vertical integration in terms of business model, and that's why we are very encouraged as we move ahead how we can capitalize on that. So organic growth is our prime strategy, but we will also complement by acquisitions. And we made a comment last year that we will continue to spend $1 to $2 billion per year relative to acquisitions. That all will be complementary to the businesses. And again, now as you think about it in terms of our portfolio prioritization, that's an important tool for us in order to make sure that we make the investments in the right areas. Now, it's important for us to make sure we can pay for the investment we are doing, and operational excellence is a strong portion for us. A company that over years have had 20% operating income and a return of over 20% in return of invested capital, by definition, have a good model of operational excellence. However, we believe that we can become even stronger and have now reinforced again Lean Six Sigma, specifically in manufacturing. So we have appointed a new organization that are now driving even more into the manufacturing side for us, and that's important. Also, what we're doing, we are implementing an SAP system that we are in the third year of implementation that will have a good benefit for us as we move ahead relative to efficiency and operational excellence. Now, we have a strong record of paying dividends, as you can see on this chart, and we have raised dividends for 55 years consecutively, including an 8% increase this year. So it's an important element for us, and for the future, the dividend increases is expected to grow in line with the earnings over time. So very committed to it and had a good record of it. In terms of other means of returning cash to shareholders, stock repurchase is another way. And here we indicate our plan that we expect to see in the next couple of years. And you can see on gross stock repurchases, the plan is 7.5 to 15 billion over time. And in this program, we estimate we will add 1 to 2% of EPS growth annually as we move ahead. We laid out during the year our new targets for the five-year plan. And we did that on November 8, 2012. And as you can see here, we're looking for an EPS growth of 9 to 11% in the plan. We're looking for organic revenue growth of 4 to 6. Return of invested capital continues to be above 20%. And then a free cash flow conversion of 100%. Now, when we look upon this current year, Q1 for us, was a year that was very strong and very good. And if you look upon it here, you can see that we generated a 2% organic growth with four of our five businesses that grew in the range that we expect them to do for the year of 2013. And in terms of operating income, that was 21.6% with four of our five businesses above 21%. The only exception was electronic and energy that came in the mid-teens. So what do we see for the rest of the year? First of all, we anticipate that it will be tougher in Q2, and as we said, as we move into the year, that Q1 and Q2, beginning of the year, will be slower, and the pickup will come in the second part of the year, and that's what we continue to see. And it's specifically the consumer electronic markets that remain weak in the first half, and then that we will see that pick up in the second half of the year. As we all know, the Japanese yen continues to weaken, and for us that have around 9% of our business in Japan, that have an impact, and you can see we have changed the sales in terms of currency impact of now being 1.5% negative versus flat in the plan. And most of that effect we will see in Q2. But we have then to continue to focus on operational excellence, which we will do in order to offset as much of that headwind as possible. And we will continue to invest in research and development as we move ahead, and also our capital, because as you know, capital is type of what we see longer term, so we are committed to the figure we laid out in the plan. And then in terms of gross share repurchases, we're tracking to the high end of the 2 to 3 billion range that we laid out in the plan. So we said 2 to 3, and we are ranging now to the higher part of that one. So with that, I thank you, and then I think we go into some questions that we have. Right?
So if I could ask again everybody to fill out those index cards, and while I'm waiting for those, Inga, so now here again, third year, but more than a year specifically into this role, as you think about it, what's gone better than you expected at a high level? What hasn't gone as well? And what have you learned that's affecting how you lead the company today?
Well, I think, first of all, I am even more impressed of our capabilities in research and development. They've been a big learning for me, and I've spent a lot of time the last 2 years. As you know, I had 9 months as COO, which was maybe a little bit of preparation in order to lay out the new strategies or refine strategies as we move ahead. And I spent a lot of time outside of my own comfort zone, which was to go very much into research and development, go into laboratories, and go into manufacturing. And I would say that I'm even more impressed of our capabilities in engineering and in research and development. So I think that's on the positive side. I also learned in that process that we needed to prioritize our businesses. And I would say that I'm very pleased with the way that took hold in the company, the way we looked upon it as a team, and the way that all businesses, in fact, understood their position, which was in combination of strategic importance and financial performance. So I think those are things that have gone well. We have done very good progress in the commercialization exercises. We have still some work to do there, but we're making very, very good progress. And so I'm happy with that as well.
Great. Let me move to, I'll alternate as we get more cards up here between some of the audience and some of my questions. 3M's uniquely positioned in the global economy. What are you seeing in terms of recovery and growth in the U.S., Europe, and emerging countries?
Mm-hmm. Well, we have had a good time in U.S. the last couple of years, and one of the reasons for that is that we have refocused an organization here. So we are pleased with the growth we have had here. We had a little bit of a slower growth in the beginning of this year, but as we roll out for the rest of the year, we think that we will continue to have the same growth rate as we had in the first quarter. So we are not overly positive, but more positive in U.S. West Europe, I would say, have, in my view, have stabilized on a lower level. Our view on West Europe is, there's not much growth as we speak, but we should not forget that Europe is 25% of the global GDP. It's a big portion of the economy. It's very well developed by definition, well-educated people, and there's some very big global companies there. So even if there is not much of a growth as we speak, it has stabilized on the lower level, and there's still market share to be gained over there, which we are going after. And we have also, for quite some years, looked into our structure in West Europe and consolidated quite a bit. So it's for us, we think we can capitalize big time on that when it turns around, which will come probably later. I don't think we see anything during this year. In terms of developing economies, there's a certain portion that are doing well. Specifically, I would say if you go over to some part in Central East Europe, it's doing well for us. Latin America is doing extremely well, and we have done very well for many, many years. And then it's a little bit mixed in Asia. And we saw, I think, they rolled down the growth outlook for China recently again. Still, it's a 7 to 8% growth rate there. And if you can just get on the target of putting down some growth targets of 1.5 to 2x IPI, you will grow pretty well in a good economy. So I think that when China is coming back and growing even faster, you will also see a big pickup in Southeast Asia. Now, again, I don't think we will see China growing as much in the future as I've seen in the past, but the economy is so much bigger now, and we have a very big business and a good platform.
Great. So I have at least three questions, maybe four, basically all asking the same thing, which is, you know, why do you think the second half will be better specifically? Do you see real economic improvement, or is it just easier comparisons? And I've got about five variations on that theme.
Yeah, right. I think it's a combination. I think, first of all, external data have showed us from the beginning of the year that specifically in consumer electronics that will come back in the second part of the year. So when we rolled in our plan for the year, that was what we looked upon as well. We were very cautious as we rolled into the year and have this type of layout. And it's based on external data in from that perspective. And when that is coming, you will have a lift in many economies around the world. So I think that's one of the elements. And then the comparison is slightly easier for us as well.
Are there some specific business units when you think about this that where you see most of the lift?
Well, we will see in specifically electronic, the electronic business, that's what we will see. And then if you think about what that business is done, you will see it in electronic and you will see it in Asia specifically. I think that's where you will see it. And that's our plan. Again, we are very cautious as we continue into the year, right? But that is what we plan for this.
Are you seeing, what are you seeing on the inventory stocking levels in terms of destocking or restocking patterns going on? Are you kind of neutral at this point?
That's neutral at this point in time. So I think we said on our last earnings call that we have not seen any changes, and there's no change from the earnings call until today.
One of these questions is just more broadly asking about, is the U.S. looking more attractive as a place to build manufacturing capacity, and if so, why? Or not? Yeah. And I remember you and David have talked about where you're spending your incremental CapEx and things like that.
You know, first of all, just a couple of comments on United States from my perspective. You know, United States is the biggest economy in the world. 3M is a U.S. company. We have an incredible base here. We have very strong brand equity. We have strong market positions. We have the center of research and development here, and we have manufacturing capabilities in this country. So I personally and 3M, we believe in United States there's still a big opportunity for us to grow, which will be a combination of more penetration and to take market share. Our strategy for 3M has always been a local strategy, meaning we invest for the domestic business wherever we go. So if it's United States, we invest here for production for the domestic market. When we go to China, it's China for China. When we go to India, it's India for India. When we go to Russia, it's Russia for Russia. So we never move around in order to capitalize on lower labor costs and then export. So it's always a domestic play. So if you think about that for United States, you know, when it makes sense for us, we will invest here for the domestic market, but we will invest overseas for those markets where we capitalize on the local opportunities there, which is important for us in terms of long-term also be thinking about exchange, etc.
So a related question is from another audience member. I may not get to any of mine. That's fine. We've got lots of great enthusiasm. Mine's over here, right? This is not one. When you look out over the next 2 to 3 years, what areas or geographies could surprise to the upside or downside relative to your plan?
I think, you know, for us, still a big lever for us is Latin America. So I still believe there is much more for us to go in Latin America based on a very, very strong fundamental organization that we have in place. So for us, Latin America, which by the way, for us is as big as China and it's growing slightly faster than China at this point in time. So I would say from 3M's perspective, Latin America is an upside. In terms of any negative surprises, I don't know if there is, I think we have been very cautious in the way we laid out the plan. So I cannot really talk to that to say if there will be one specific place that will have a really big impact negatively for 3M. I think if there's a negative impact, it will be for all of us, right? So I cannot talk to that specifically for 3M.
Okay. Other questions here. Are your operating margins and ROIC lower or higher in developing markets?
Our margins in developing economies are higher than in developed world. And that's based on the business model we're operating and the way we build out businesses. And we have a very vertical model in 3M, which is allowing us to build out businesses and capitalize on investments done different places before you start to make the big investments in terms of manufacturing, research and development as you commercialize. So the answer is our margins is higher there. That's also why we are very, very optimistic in terms of the build-out, as I showed on that chart, of how economies are developing over time. And, you know, you look upon that, it look maybe a little bit theoretically laid out, but reality is, like, I have lived in many different countries, and one place I lived for some years was in Russia. And when you live in Russia, which I did around 1995, you get an appreciation for the build-out of a country and an economy, what is happening over time, right? And I have also, of course, have a connection there since that time, and I can see exactly how the evolution is happening for companies and for people in that country. That's why I'm a very strong believer in that model. And if you think about things now start to move around the world, with done right with our portfolio 3M, that will be a good upside for us.
It raises a couple of questions for me. Yeah. One is healthcare penetration, your healthcare business at the highest margin, is most highly penetrated in developed markets, and you know 30% plus margins, yep. And the other businesses are in the 20s. How do I reconcile that statement around the developing markets being that much more profitable? Is it allocation of the cost base that's different?
There is an allocation of cost, but it's also the portfolio by definition. You get a better margin for us in developing economy as we launch the product.
So even in those other business units, they're running at higher margin levels, right?
On leverage, average, they do that. The other thing is we have, you think about the operation, we have a much leaner organization in the developing economies. So one way to think about it, the way most enterprises were building the businesses when they started 50, 60, 70 years ago in United States and West Europe, you, at that time, build a different infrastructure than you need to do today in the developing world, right? So you have another benefit there. And you have just to learn from the past. And I think for a company like 3M and other companies that build up businesses in West Europe in early 50s, I think they have to make sure that they and we learn from what happened from an evolution of the economy and the business as you move forward. So make sure that you're very lean in your structure as you build out your business in Central East Europe, Middle East Africa, Latin America, and developing Asia.
Just before I get off this topic, there was one other comment that was made at one point by a 3M executive, which was that over a very long period of time, the margins in those developing markets would gravitate towards developed market margins naturally. Is that still true, or do you think about it differently?
Yeah, I don't think that's true by definition, right? That's coming back to if you continue with the so-called older model that you used at the time when you build business in West Europe, maybe it would happen. It will not happen as we are building out our businesses now. And I think it's it's interesting for us as individuals and as companies. You have to go through certain cycles in order to learn. I personally went through a restructuring of West Europe in 2002, where I was, after being part of building a centralized organization in West Europe, starting in the middle of 90s, when the theory then was that Europe will be one European Union with free flow of labor and products, and there will be one currency. So a centralized organization made sense at that point in time from a vision perspective. It didn't really work relative to execution, meaning that you have to restructure that, which we did 2002. When you have done that once, that I had to do, right, which took us 7 quarters, and we took out 4,000 people of total 20,000. When you have done that one time yourself, I can tell you one thing. You are very careful to build infrastructure again because you would not like to do it again personally, and you wouldn't like to ask anyone to to go and lay off that many people based on that you had built a structure that you couldn't afford. So that's why I'm saying that at least if you ask me and my management team, there is no way that we will build an infrastructure in that way that by definition will draw down margins over time.
Okay, and another audience question on the same topic. Can you maintain your high operating margins in a low growth environment?
Yes, we can. We can. That's we can. You know, and I think that's the other thing in terms of our efficiency of operational excellence and the vertical business model that we are using. As I showed on the first chart relative to the strengths of 3M, which is basically around five platforms. So we will be able to do
so
that.
So productivity, new product mix, and pricing?
Exactly.
Okay. So let me move to a different topic, and this is all around basically portfolio management and capital allocation.
Mm-hmm.
Let me begin with my high-level one, which is what are, as CEO and chairman now, what are your most important levers that you're pulling as CEO?
Well, I think that there was an important element to do this portfolio rationalization and privatization. Because that will also make sure that we get an allocation of resources in a different way. Everywhere I've been in the past, I've been one of the first things I've done is to look upon the portfolio and prioritize it. So I think that's an important element as we move ahead, because we can allocate the capital, but we can also look upon the leadership capabilities for each and individual businesses. And that is where you have the lever by definition to make sure that everyone understands the role, everyone understands the lever we will give them in terms of financial targets, and they know the objective. So that's an important element for me.
I noticed on that slide that you put up the bubble chart.
Yeah.
I think it might have been slide 7 or around there. You had eight bubbles or eight businesses in the under strategic review, roughly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then you had, all right, well, of the 34, but you, yeah. So and we have the size of the businesses and all of that. But it's very helpful. So as you sort of think about those, to what extent are you really looking to restructure those versus exit, or how are you thinking about that? And there's a whole bunch of businesses in the middle of the chart that are not classified as heartland, growth, or strategic review.
Right. Well, first of all,
and I commend you on the fishing rod decision.
Okay. Well, thank you. Yeah. Well, that's an example of that we are taking action based on the plan. So I think that's an important element. That was one business that we exited and we sold and went out of, and that's an direct outcome of the prioritization work we did. First of all, the businesses, they're under strategic review. They all make money. They should, in many cases, be very good businesses with other companies. I think one of the issues for them is that they are competing with some incredible strong businesses in 3M, meaning that they are type of lagging our performance. That is why we have them there. That's why I would like to talk to them. That's why we would like to assess what should we do. So some of them we have already combined. We had the safety division became combined with traffic safety systems because it made more sense, and we rationalized, we reduced the number of people and drove productivity, etc. So they're all in the process of going through if we should harvest them, or if we should combine them, or if we eventually will exit them. The objective is not, by definition, to start on the exit road. The objective is to start to have a plan where you improve each business as you go. And I think the other thing is businesses that are in heartland that we like, you know, they are big, they are very profitable, they have a very strong brand equity, they are scalable, and they are global. We like that. If you're in strategic review of those five things I just mentioned that we like, those businesses down there are missing maybe two or three of those elements. And then you have to ask yourself the question, okay, what do you do in order to improve them? But we start by the objective to improve them. Now, as you saw, we sold one small one, but it was very clear early in the work there that it couldn't be really successful with 3M. We'd be more successful with someone else.
Okay, so I have a number of questions to work through quickly here on the portfolio in our remaining time here. Let me start with what are your financial metrics for acquisitions, and why have an explicit annual target for the size that you do, $1 to $2 billion?
Well, first of all, we look upon acquisitions from a strategic perspective, and we did the last five, six, 7 years. I think we do 60 to 70 acquisitions. Many of them were smaller. One of the things you will see as we move ahead is that they will be slightly bigger than in the past, and then also fewer. And they will be really based on our strategic imperatives as we move ahead. So I think that's where you have to look at. And I said, as we said, 1 to 2 billion per year, probably this year is closer to a billion or something like that, right? Because it's difficult from a timing perspective to lay it out, and it should be attractive for you as you move ahead. But I think it's we evaluate them the whole time as they come up in the pipeline, and we try to see where it will make sense for us to move forward.
So this related question is, why aren't, given interest rates are so low, why aren't 3M and other large caps, as you looked at them, not doing more M&A right now?
Yeah. Well, as interest rates are low, the price is also high in a way, right? And so that's the interesting element of it, you know. Our prime strategy is organic growth, right? So we will do it as a complementary strategy to our growth rate. But up to this point in time, there's been many in the pipeline, but in our view, have been too expensive to execute them at this point in time. So I don't think it's a metric by definition that you just have to do because you're sitting with the money unable to do it. And in my view, it's not... Objective for me is not to do acquisitions. The objective for me is to do the right acquisitions. I think that's more important than take my time on it. And then if we're not able to do it, we will invest in organic growth and eventually give back some money to shareholders, which is then better than to do the wrong acquisitions.
Right. And so three related questions on buybacks and on your balance sheet. One comment here I think is interesting. Cash generation is so strong in good times and bad. Why not use share repurchases as an ongoing means of achieving 2-3% EPS growth annually rather than on an ad hoc basis? Mm-hmm. Or at least say repurchase will be used in a downturn to support, say, 9% EPS mm-hmm. growth when the economy is weak, which mm-hmm. is the low end of your 9-11% range.
Yeah. Well, we will like to have the flexibility as we go ahead. And as I laid out the plan as we go ahead, which is a step up, in fact, right? We would like to keep the flexibility as we move ahead and still have a strong balance sheet and see if we can do something that that is interesting for all of us in terms of growth as well. But I think we have made a step up this year. We are coming closer to 3 billion versus the 2 to 3 we laid out. So I think we're on the right track, and we have a history of done it well, I think, you know. And we would like to continue our plan as we have laid it out.
Okay. And you also made the decision this year to take dividend growth to in line with your EPS growth
yes.
rather than slightly below. I'm not sure that gets fully out there.
Yeah.
What drove that decision to increase your dividend payout?
Well, we just thought it was a fair way to do it. I think it should be a ratio relative to our shareholders that they can look upon. And we just thought that... We have a good history of dividends. We just thought it was time for us to step it up a little bit, which I think was very much appreciated.
Is this part of a multi-step plan? Or
No, it's not a part of a multi-step plan.
Okay.
It was something we decided this year.
I had to ask, right?
Yeah.
How do you think about the framework for your correct leverage and capital structure in the company?
Sorry?
Your framework for leverage,
yeah.
Your financial leverage, your capital structure.
Yeah.
You know, I think this question is alluding to why not increase the debt level?
Yeah. Well, I think first of all, you know, we have a history in the company in terms of how we have used the model of capital allocation. And we laid that out on November 8th in the shareholder meeting or in the investor meeting in St. Paul. And we're sticking to that plan. So I think it's important that we have the elements in terms of make sure that we first of all focus on having resources for organic growth, which is a key element for us. So that's what we're working the plan on.
Okay, and then this question is interesting. Do you target gross share buybacks or net? So will you adjust
gross.
The size of
gross.
The share repurchase if you see? Okay.
What I showed here was gross.
So you won't adjust it if you receive more than expected options exercised? Right?
No, we
okay.
won't.
Okay. Are executives, I don't like this word, but do you motivate executives with incentives
yeah.
with on ROIC at all? Do do you use ROIC all the way down? And if you do, how do you flow it down?
Yeah. Well, we have a couple of different compensation systems in place, and some are for executive management, which is the top 100 leaders in our company, that are basically measured on the objective that we're showing for our shareholders. So it's part of the compensation system, and one of my compensation system is on the four metrics that I showed, which is earnings per share, organic growth, return of invested capital, and then cash element.
I want to hit some of these other questions. We have quite a diverse set here. Mm-hmm. So maybe in a very short answer, mm-hmm. this one, what are some of the disruptive new products that you are excited about in the future? And this is about another follow-on question on R&D, but why don't we answer that first one?
Yeah. we have just put in place a new innovation board that is working on currently 15 different new ideas in terms of disruptive technologies. And there's a couple of them that are very interesting. That's, in fact, it's a little bit early to talk about, but they are very, very interesting, and we hope we can show that sometime next year, hopefully, but I'm not really sure. There's a couple of them that are very, very interesting. The other thing that is a big effort in terms of research and development for us is what we're doing around sustainability. And we have had a couple of breakthroughs specifically around the adhesive activities, which is based on plant-based adhesives that are reusable and renewable. So that have now been commercialized in our consumer business group in icon brands like Post-it and Scotch. And now that platform is available for the rest of the company to use. So I think those type of things are very, very interesting as we move ahead.
So if I ignore the disruptive stuff you can't mm-hmm. talk about, and we just look right. at the existing portfolio, the you know, that's one. Is there a second most product that's already out there but not widely, you know, being distributed
yeah.
yet
well,
that you're most
yeah.
excited about?
I think one thing I would talk about is the way we build out a ceramic platform, which we did actually through an acquisition.
Ceradyne,
yeah. So if you think about that, we had a very good capability already in ceramics, but we expanded it, and that's one of our 45 technology platforms. So that acquisition in Ceradyne is very, very promising long-term for us, and I think it's 15 different divisions that can use the technology into aerospace, to automotive, etc. So I think from building out platforms, that is what is very exciting for us. And I think it's important to look upon it not from specific product perspective, but to look into the markets and see what we can do in terms of solution based on the platforms that we have.
Two related R&D questions. R&D spend increased from 5% to 5% plus. How will they measure the ROI on that investment 3 to 5 years from now? How do you know that the spend is efficient spend?
Yeah. Well, first of all, the way we measure it's NPVI, New Product Vitality Index. And that for us have gone in the last 5 years from 19% to 32%. The objective is to move towards 40. So NPVI, which stands for new product sold today that was not commercialized 5 years ago, it's like 32% for the company. So that's an important element. Now the increase we are shooting for in terms of research and development will go very much versus new products, meaning new products to new markets. So we have three categories. We are class 3, class 4, and class 5. Class 3 is product where we replace ourselves. So we cannibalize ourselves. We're doing very well, class 3. Class 4 is new product to current customers or current markets. We do okay. Class 5 is disruptive technologies, new product to new markets. More risky, take longer time. That is why we make this investment for the company in order to make sure that we make some investment where we will see the result maybe 5 to 10 years from now. And it's more difficult for the business units and the division to do the investment because they are so focused on the next quarter. So we put money aside and step up in research and development, we go to class 5 everything. That's where that is. That's also where this new innovation board was put in place, in order to measure that.
And the related R&D question from the audience was, what gives you confidence that R&D spend is going to drive higher margins, given your already high margins?
Well, by definition, you know, when you introduce a new solution based on a higher element into the marketplace, you will, by definition, be able to take out a higher price point. And you have to be efficient in the manufacturing capabilities as well in order to drive down cost. So history for us is that we are able to drive higher margins by introducing new products the whole time. That is why research and development is in the center of the plan. It's a key element for 3M in the past, was in the past and will be in the future, to make investment in research and development. If not, after a while you will be commoditized, then you run into real big problems in terms of your cost structure and the price points, meaning less margins.
Are you being more selective about the prior pyramid strategy approach that was discussed?
We don't talk so much about the pyramid strategy. The pyramid was basically the marketplace. So I would say that you look upon it as a marketplace. That's where you go into the strategy in terms of look upon your penetration level, your market share level on a bigger scale. Then you have to work inside that market in order to both take market share and improve your penetration.
Okay, I want to get to a couple of questions from the audience, or a few questions on the yen, Japanese yen exposure, mm-hmm. and the steps 3M is taking to mitigate that impact on the business and the hedge, you know, to what extent you're hedging, et cetera, policy.
Yeah. Well, a couple of things relative to Japan. You know, we start to reset the Japanese organization probably 4 years ago, and we, in that time, invested $51 million in order to reset the manufacturing footprint in Japan at that time. We also start to move and shift the resources versus more domestic businesses. Because one of the things that is a big thing in terms of the business in Japan is consumer electronic and automotive industry, that a lot of them are export businesses out of Japan. So you think about the new agenda for Japan is more domestic. And we started in that time to focus more on our consumer business and more on healthcare business in order to build them out. And what we saw here in the first quarter, we had 7% growth in Japan for consumer and healthcare businesses. So that basically what we have to make sure that you look upon structure, you look upon your portfolio. But I think the good thing for us is we started 4 or 5 years ago, as we did with West Europe, by the way. I mean, our restructuring and realignment in West Europe started a long time ago, right? So you have to be ahead of it in terms of, but we don't change anything relative to hedging based on the current situation. And we laid out here the impact it will have for the year and in Q2.
Okay, and let me at least get to a couple international questions. What changes are you seeing in the competitive environment with regard to Chinese competition, any pricing pressure in particular areas?
Yeah, in terms of, and we talked about this earlier here this morning, Steve, relative to, you see more competition of local competitors in China, and that type of natural, right? Big companies, and they're competing there. Up to this point in time, we have at least not seen significant Chinese competitors on a big scale and the rest of the world. But they are coming in type of smaller companies start to build out the capabilities. So I think it's one of those things that you cannot be complacent and you need to make sure that you have your eyes open the whole time relative to how they build out around the world. But I would say for the Chinese competitors specifically, I think the biggest push you have is in China by definition. At this point in time.
And pricing pressure in any particular spots globally?
No, I will not say so in terms of specifically coming from the Chinese companies. No.
Okay. And we are out of time. I'm going to end with a question and then give you some closing comments. This is a very positive question. Why is Latin America the shining light in developing markets? Is it the team or is it how your products are positioned within Latin America versus other emerging markets?
Yeah. I think it's a combination of us being in very early. We have been in Brazil since 1946. So think about people start to talk about BRIC a couple of years ago, 8 years ago. 3M was there in 1946. And then it's the way they position the products all over Latin America is broad-based. So it's Brazil and Mexico are the big portions, but all the smaller countries are doing very, very well. And I would say, for us in Latin America, we have a very strong team, and it's a combination of entrepreneurship and process orientation, which is a fantastic combination when you think about it. So it's this can-do attitude and able to mix the two of them in a very, very nice way. And as most of us know, American brands are playing very, very well in Latin America. And if you're in early, you build a good base, and that's what we have done. And I would say have had over years a super team there that have cannibalized on the opportunity.
I'm sorry I didn't get to everybody's questions. We had a lot. Yeah. But any closing comments?
No, thank you very much. It was a pleasure to be here.
Thanks very much, you guys.